Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity.
Cool.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
fighting. Right now, right now.
Now the time to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
Yes, yes, we are going to do it right. We are here at the Historically Black College of Harris Stowe. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And we are in some troubled times, my people. We are. I want to say that the opinions expressed on Black Radio Hall of Fame are those of the program host, me, and not necessarily those of Harris Stowe or Black Radio Hall of Fame. So we are going to get started, but this is a show that talks about people engaged in struggle for change. We are talking about folks fighting for democracy, for economic justice, for political power, wherever they might be. And these struggles connect both in spirit and in political unity. And so my task, my job, my joy is to bring those folks to you, those people that are on the front line during that struggle, so that you can see how, not only how these struggles connect, but to see how you can get involved. I want to say that you thought you were going to be hearing from Jamal Birth Village today. I couldn't connect with them when we were about to go on air, so I'm thinking they're somewhere birthing a baby. I hope so. But, you know, Jamal Birth Village is really the answer, the response to Black mortality rate of both mamas and babies. And so we really wanted to talk to them, but it's going to be an issue. It's going to be an issue for a while, so we will have them on the future. So, but, you know, we got some stuff to talk about today, so that's what I'm going to do. First of all, where is Kim Gardner? Where is Kim Gardner? Now, this is the question that's been posed in a press conference by State Auditor Scott Fitzpatrick. This is the kind of political stunt that these people play. Now, Kim Gardner, who was the circuit attorney, literally ran out of office, had a target on her back from day one when she decided she was going to go after Republican Guyton over his, you know, alleged shenanigans with his mistress. She became the target. There was not a minute's peace in that office, you all, and that's the truth. So where's Kim Gardner? Where's she supposed to be? And Scott Fitzpatrick knows that he's supposed to be communicating with Kim Gardner's attorney. He knows who that attorney is. He has that person's contact number. So why would you get out there and try to act like she's hiding from you? Please, please. So we're going to know all the information about that audit, and we'll see how credible it is, because again, this is somebody who from day one never got an ounce of peace and really was a hamstring to do the job that we sent her to do. Because remember, we sent her there twice. So she was re-elected and re-elected. And so here are these folks who were constantly badgering her, constantly throwing lawsuits at her. And even there were staff folks who were undermining from the inside. So she had a rough time, y'all. She did. And Kim Gardner was just like the rest of us. She had her flaws. She admitted those, you know, publicly. But when you get to the greater picture of what she had to face, it really is ridiculous, and it's almost criminal. And when you look across the country, you see that this was happening to other black women in office, and particularly those who came into office with a reform agenda. So what that says to me, you all, is that we have to be vigilant when we elect people, and we expect them to carry out the agenda that we sent them there, not their agenda, the agenda that we sent them there. And that sometimes is in a very formal way. Here's the agenda that the people say they want you to do. And then we go to the candidates and say, are you willing to do this? And if you are, we're going to work hard to get you in office, and we're going to protect you as you try to implement these reforms. We cannot let these people go in and just leave them hanging in there. So the way that Kim Gardner was treated as a democratically elected official to an office that is so, so very critical to the black community, we need to take note of that. There's some lessons to be learned from that, you all. And I would say that the way that she was treated in the most public and foul way is one of the reasons why it was difficult to find candidates to run for that office. And so I think, you know, that's the sad byproduct of that saga. And it really is sad. So State Auditor Scott Fitzpatrick, go talk to Kim Gardner's attorney and quit trying to use her as a way for you to promote your candidacy and your campaign. It's cowardly and it's sickening. I mean, so one of the things that we've been watching both here in St. Louis and across the country is the student protests in support of Palestine. And this has really escalated, y'all. And we've seen the crackdown, some of it very, very brutal, from police and sometimes from National Guard. But last week I reported that Steve Damari was a bystander. He's part of the Palestinian Support Committee, and he literally was just on the sidelines filming. And they, you know, busted him up and drug him all around the campus. But, you know, Steve is recuperating. He's, you know, doing the best he can given the circumstances. But we did get a report from Sandra Tamari that he's doing okay. And in fact, he has a doctor's appointment today. So we are wishing him, we sending him strong healing vibes, because that was so uncalled for. But you know, when we think about the use of the word outsiders, Steve Tamari could be considered an outsider, but you have the right to film, you have a right to assemble. And so in certain ways, these people are redefining First Amendment rights. And so I think what the young people are doing on campus is historic. And I know it's historic because it's been done before with some amount of success. So right now, there's literally protest over 100 campuses across the country. And I think the very special feature to this is that this is the end of the semester. Some of these students are graduating, and yet they're putting their careers and their student scholarships on the line to make a statement. And so whenever people stand up like that, particularly young people, I think we need to be there to support them. These are the protests, in case you look fuzzy about why these students are out there. The protests are about solidarity with Palestine, and it stems from the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel, where there were 1,200 Israelis that were killed. And nobody I know, and I'm saying this with all the veracity in my blood, I have heard nobody say that that was okay for Hamas to do that. So when you look at what the response was to that attack, it pales in comparison, because now 34,000 Palestinians have lost their lives. The, you know, Gaza and West Bank have been bombed, and it's almost like rubble. You know, most of the schools are inoperable. Most of the hospitals are inoperable. I mean, if we don't have some serious intervention by the countries of the world, you know, it's going to be reduced to rubble, and Palestinians will have been driven off their land. So this is a serious thing. And I think for the young people, and for a number of us as well, we need to be on the side of history. So when people look back and say, what were you doing to stop the genocide of the Palestinians? We can very definitively say, here's what I did, and here's the impact that it had. So I want us to find ways to support the young people. They weren't the first ones to start the protest. Those protests were started in the streets, but they moved to the campuses quite quickly. And what I have been trying to explain to people is, like, why are they just about Palestine? What about all these other issues? They have been listening. They have been fighting. They have been doing their resistance around some of these other issues on their campus, like the dismantling of the DEI programs and projects. DEI is divestment, inclusion, and equity. And so, diversity. diversity. Yeah. So they were already upset about that. So, and see, the thing that we always have to do is, follow the hand and follow the money. And so the same Zionist forces that were on those campuses saying, you need to dismantle this program, or you need to, stop these students from being vocal, against, you know, in support of diversity, they're the same ones who are telling these universities, you need to crack down on these students. And so the Zionists got a long reach, and their money goes a long way. And so we have to always know where the source of the oppression and repression is coming from. But, you know, young people are doing what they do. They bring in that energy. They bring in that creativity. And they're exposing their colleges and universities for these investments in what they consider to be an illegal and criminal government. And so they're targeting Boeing, Lockheed, Amazon, because they have investments in Israel. But I also got an email that Google is sharing AI technology with Israel. And so that's very interesting. And as you know, AI is artificial intelligence. And so this is going to be part of the surveillance that they're going to use. This is Google technology that Israel is now able to use. And so we have U.S. companies that are actively involved in keeping this propped up regime that is killing thousands and thousands of people. So there is a precedent for this whole divestment move, and it's called BDS. That's boycott, divest, and sanctions. And so, young people, this is not the first wave of BDS. There have been several waves of BDS. And I keep reminding people that it was during the U.S. Free South Africa movement that campuses did the very same thing and were successful in getting either their campuses to partially divest or totally divest. So almost 155 campuses back in the height of the anti-apartheid movement was involved in, you know, resistance to their campuses, investments in South Africa. There were many, many boycotts against individual corporations like, what was that? The gas people, Shell Oil. So you know, we saw South Africa come to his knees based on the world saying, we cannot allow this to happen. And we're going to do all we can, whether it's divestment, whether it's not buy your products, whether it's, you know, shaming you, we are not going to be a part of this continued use of, you know, tyranny over African people. And so we saw eventually that, you know, there was a transition, and Nelson Mandela, who had been jailed for decades, became the first president of a free South Africa. So young people, keep up the fight. We are there, and we are not going to be considered outsiders. This is our city. This is our town. And we should be able to have free access to wherever we want to go, as long as we're not hurting anybody. So I want you to keep that up. But I just want to give you an inkling about how much money these campuses, these universities have at their disposal. And of course, you know, you would imagine somebody like a Harvard is at the top of the list in terms of endowment. They got about $50 billion in endowment. That's billions with a B, y'all. $50 billion. And endowment basically is to universities what 401ks are for us poor people. So that's where all their money is, investment, and they grow and grow and grow, and then they could use them to do other stuff with. So these folks are not, they're not hurting. They're not hurting at all. Yale has $41 billion. Columbia has $13 billion. Washington University has $14 billion. So these people, they got some money, y'all. These are the reserves. This is not even what they have at for their operating budget. This is reserve. And when I think about how much money it costs to attend these colleges and universities, I mean, I just don't know how the average working class kid is going to go to those campuses unless they get a full scholarship. Because, you know, $50,000 to $60,000 a year for tuition. And that's more than some people make in a year for working every day, 40 hours a week, five, six days a week. So, you know, the whole issue of education, free education, it really does need to be a demand, because I can tell you when you go on these campuses, it does look like some kind of corporate, what's the word I'm looking for? Some kind of corporate facade. You know, sometimes the buildings are named after these corporate barons who have, you know, given them a large sum of money so they could have something erected in their name. And then, you know, it's all of the advertisement that's, you know, coming at those students in the student center, in the hallways, in the school buildings. I mean, it's nonstop. The other thing that's interesting is when you think about the sciences, and you think about schools like a WashU that has medical programs, you got to know that some of those big pharma folks are there giving money so that the students who are learning how to practice medicine will be indoctrinated with their particular product. So I just think it's insidious, and you really have to be a woke student nowadays not to let that stuff seep through. So kudos to the young people. I want them to stay safe. And the thing that I think is really important is that they're not just out there protesting. They have demands. They have demands, and that's important in terms of strategy. You have to have demands. Just raising hell, that's part of it. That's good to be organized to do that, but you got to have some demands. So let's keep an eye on that situation. The students now at SLU are getting more organized, because guess what they did at Washington U? Where those protests were, they erected chain link fence literally around the whole campus. I'm not talking about those little cheap, like, orange, you know, plastic stuff. They have chain link fences that they put up. So there's no way in the world you're getting through that. And of course, they're saying because they're a private campus, you'll be trespassing. So young people now are going to see how they can support this issue by going to St. Louis University. So, and unfortunately, some of these campuses have, you know, shut down their graduation ceremonies and some other things. But, you know, that's all part of the struggle. And so, again, wishing our young people keep up the fight, but be safe in doing it. And We are not outsiders. We are here to support you. So remember that. I'm going to move to, remember we had Sandra Keeley on here talking about expungement, and she was going to be having a program that weekend. And she had a number of folks who were intentional in their invitations, because all of them have some role in the expungement process. I was able to attend that at the Central Library, and I learned some stuff that, you know, I thought I knew about expungement, but I learned some new stuff. And so what we have told Sandra Keeley and the other endorsers is that we want to join to get 1,000 expungements. And it should be easy, because remember, we know that one of four people in this country or in prison or under supervision. So we should be able to get those expungements fairly quickly. But here's the thing. People need to know how to do it and where they can get the forms and get some help with that. So we're going to try to put together some kind of schedule so people know how to do that, because it's not an easy process. And there have been people who went through the whole process, got in front of the judge, only to find out that they were ineligible. And that's got to be just mind-blowing and devastating for that to happen. But we want to keep you informed about that and where people can go to get some help with filling out those forms, because, you know, sometimes it's intimidating just to fill out the form. I understand it's fairly long. So you might need some help, and we're going to have people on board to help you with that. You know, when I look at, you know, the fact that there is a movement to end prisons, and starting with not sending people to prison, starting with ending, the whole assembly line to jails because you don't have money for bail. I'm thinking about where we're going, y'all, and those jails might be filling back up again. So let's fight for them to be healthy, sane, humane, because we don't know if we're going to end up there. And so that's part of the view that I always have, is like, if I had to be there for whatever reason, what would I want to experience or not experience? And so right now, we need to get folks off the rolls who don't need to be on the rolls. And we need to let people know, for some reason, it's still erroneous information about if you can vote or not. And so we need to get people to understand, just because you serve time doesn't mean you are ineligible to be a voter forever. That's simply just not true. So we're going to be talking about expungement and decriminalizing our people to the extent we can. And I just want to say that if you had a violent felony, you are not eligible. So this is for nonviolent offenses only. So I don't want somebody coming to fill out all that paperwork and only to find out, well, that armed robbery you did 20 years ago, it's going to still be on the books. So, but we are definitely trying to decriminalize our community here. This month is Mental Health Month. And I'm part of the board of Visions for Children at Risk. And we had an event at Deaconess Saturday. And, you know, it was a lot of mental health providers there and talking about, you know, mental health, particularly for our children. And I got a chance to talk to a mother about her son. And, you know, it's just sad talking to people and just wondering how they cope with it when they don't have near the resources or education to really advocate for their child. Their teenage son has some issues. He has been engaged in self-mutilation. So there are all these scars on his arms, which has, this is what's really, to me, really sad. His markings have made him the brunt of bullying at his school, so he can't even go to school. So it's just a different kind of atmosphere, I know, in school these days, because it's not like when I was going to school. We had a couple of bullies, but they weren't the dominant folks. So there was enough of us to say, hey, you need to stop that. You need to back off or leave her alone or whatever. There was a culture that behavior was unacceptable. But now, I mean, you just look at these kids in these schools and, they allow, not only do they allow the bullying to happen, they encourage it, they film it, they promote it. And to me, it's just out of control. And I've had too many parents come to me and say, Jamala, because I always tell them, go to the principal. Don't let your child be the one going to the principal. You as a parent go. Parents have gone to say, I've talked to their teacher, I've talked to the principal, and I still have not gotten any resolve to this issue. So it's frustrating. But this kid has these markings up and down his arm where he, you know, tried to self-mutilate. Well, didn't try, he actually did. And he's got some issues. He's been diagnosed, so there's a clinical diagnosis there. But he cannot get any services. And the school district that he's in really has been reluctant and resistant to providing the services that he needs. And so he ends up being in a room by himself trying to do his work in isolation. It's almost like some kind of prison sentence. And so that has done nothing for his well-being, his mental health well-being. And so that's the kind of issue that we're dealing with, you all, when we talk about mental health. And it's a month, and you all know what I always say about these months. Then that's not when you just think about that stuff. This is just lifting it up so that you know to practice these things the whole rest of the year. And so there was an article that I came across, and it was commenting on the mental health of young people. And you know, some of the behaviors of young people that are disturbing today, we actually started seeing them before the pandemic. The suicide attempts, the psychiatric hospitalizations, those were on the rise before the pandemic. But I can tell you, the pandemic didn't help. It only exacerbated those situations, because the rates of anxiety and depression doubled, and that's worldwide. That's what a pandemic does. And so I don't think we have really understood in modern times what impact short term and long term a pandemic will have on an individual, a community, and a country. In the future, I'm going to have some experts come in, and we're going to talk about the pandemic, because I have been on that for the last 4 years, and observing, you know, our people, and observing practices, observing interventions. And of course, I am not satisfied with the way that we responded, particularly for African Americans. But back to this article. One of the things in the article, because I think the premise is what is that we're just talking too much about this stuff, and maybe it's, you know, the kids' access to all these smartphones and the algorithms that draw kids away from healthy play into these addictive thought hoops. Because, you know, these algorithms are designed so that kids get affirmed by going to them, hitting a like or whatever. And so it is addictive kind of thing. And these folks know this. This is what they are selling their advertising, that these kids are going to be coming back again and again. But there's one critic that said, no, he doesn't think it's, you know, that. He thinks it's the way that we continue to paint this grim social landscape of school shootings, poverty, and global warming. So, you know, it's like this oversaturation of pessimism that's really impacting our children. And so I have to then pause and say, okay, I know I talk a lot about mental health. I try to make it be a part of our overall well-being, because it is. I mean, sometimes when I say health, I'm actually meaning mental health. But some people have compartmentalized it. That's different. But your mental health and your physical health, they are all connected. They are definitely all connected. It's kind of the one I have to say, drugs, and then say alcohol and drugs. Well, alcohol is a drug, but you know, if you don't say alcohol, people don't necessarily see it as a drug because it's more socially acceptable. But what we are doing with our children is talking about this in a way that there seems to be no way out. So, you know, the discussion around mental health, you know, the young people are interpreted as this is the way it is, and this is the society I live in, and I'm always going to feel this way, or I'm always going to be, you know, on drugs or self-medicating in some kind of way. And that's simply not the case. And so I really want us all to rethink how we talk about mental health, particularly around children. I remember back in the, maybe it was the 80s, early 90s, when we had all these labels for kids. And they had picked up on them. Now, the labels were for the educators. They weren't for the kids to know, like, you know, educate, what it was, a mentally retarded. So you were MR. You were educable. They had, like, all these things that I can't even remember all of them. And the kids would say, oh, I'm such and such, or I'm like, wait a minute. No, you aren't. You are a young person, handsome or beautiful, and you are a human being. I mean, well, these tags are supposed to be for the professionals so that we know what we're dealing with. And it's not even supposed to be a situation where that's the way you treat somebody, unless you're talking about treatment, not treat. But we get so hung up on these tags and labels that that's actually then how we begin to treat people. So I'm going to rethink the way that I talk about mental health, particularly when it's about children, because I know that sometimes it seems like we focus in on all the negative because there's so much of it going around. But that's really a glass half full kind of approach. And we have communities that are could be vibrant. They could be good places to live, work, and play. But there are external forces that try to keep us from happening. But that doesn't mean that vision, that we should let go of it, because it's hard. It's hard getting up every day, going to work, hard to navigate through all these systems that are anti-black, anti-human, anti-family, and come out at the end of it being a whole happy person. But I think our children deserve much, much more, because they are going to be growing up, y'all. Most of them will grow up, and we want them to be healthy, sane adults, productive, and be able to take care of us old folks. That's the other thing. You know, we want them to be caring adults. And so, so I'm going to be thinking more about how to discuss mental health. And so I'm asking you all to do it as well, and we can help each other. I'm going to talk a little bit about local control, y'all, because that is a thing, as I speak, that's going on in Jefferson City. They are taking away local control of the St. Louis Police Department, if they can. It's really, it's one of those things where you just get mad all over again just thinking about it, because the process of getting local control of the St. Louis Police Department took literally 20 years. How do I know that? Because I was in there for 20 years, y'all. So for somebody to just come with one fell gavel and say no, when the citizens of this city said, yes, we want local control, and they said it, y'all, in many different ways. We had a resolution that was non-binding, then it went to the ballot box, and each time, overwhelmingly, they said, we want local control of our police department. Now, I was informed by the web person over at the St. Louis American that the column that I did on local control was number one 4 weeks in a row. What that means to me, y'all, is that people are paying attention. They may not necessarily know what to do when they see this stuff happening, but many of them were a part of getting local control. So if these folks try to turn back the hands of time, which they're due because that's part of the MAGA, you know, strategy is let's go back to the pre-1950s when, you know, black folks didn't have rights and women were in the kitchen. We're saying we're not turning back the hands of time. We said we wanted local control of the police department, and that's what we mean. And so we're going to have to fight for that, y'all. So you need to find out from your elected officials how they're voting, how they're advocating for that on the floor, because we, I think it's probably another week or so in the legislative session, and then you're going to see all kind of crazy stuff happening at the midnight hour. They're going to be trying to, you know, push stuff through. So we got to keep an eye on that, and we'll have some people who are watching that, not just the local control, but some of the other legislative bills that have been tried and passing through. We'll have them on a report back. And, you know, we need to know what these folks are doing. Because even if they're not your specific senator or representative, you still need to know what these people are doing in your name. They still public servants. They're not supposed to be going off their own agenda. They're supposed to be looking at the state of Missouri and seeing how to lift it up, how to have as many pro-family issues as possible, how to have as many pro-worker legislature as possible. And yet we see them turning back the hands of time. I mean, I look at, you know, the right to a safe and affordable abortion, which is now illegal in the state of Missouri, and these folks are moving to defund Planned Parenthood altogether. Now, they already said y'all can't do abortions. They already said that it's illegal now, but that's not the only thing Planned Parenthood does. They have an array of services for women, and so now they're saying no funds, no public funds from the state will be allowed to go to Planned Parenthood. So you know what that effectively could do. I mean, this is what these folks are doing. They're finding ways to make your life miserable, drive you underground, or drive you out of business. And so we gotta step up, y'all. We gotta get more organized. So we're gonna keep our eye on that as well. If you are just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And we are here not talking about Jamal Birth Village and what they're doing over there, some of the wonderful, extraordinary work they're doing. But we're going over a number of issues that are going on both in our city and in our country. So thank you for joining us. So I want to move to another issue. So we talked about local control, we talked about mental health, we talked about expungement, we talked about, you know, the Palestinian protest and where that's going. And we're not going to let them keep asking about where Kim Gardner is, because they know where Kim Gardner is. Deal with her attorney, as you know you're supposed to, and keep it moving. And we need to be, when that audit is released, we need to be going through that, that bad boy and seeing what's real and what's not. Because I'm sure it's going to be all kinds of stuff in there. And some of it I think probably is going to be real when they talk about some of the inefficiencies. Because, again, this woman had to fight tooth and nail for her own preservation, for her own law license. Well, at the same time, she was expected to carry out the duties and functions of a circuit attorney. So, you know, some people are superhuman and can do stuff like that, but most of us cannot. We either have to focus on one thing at a time and do that well, or do none of it well. And so, so let's keep our eye on that. And I definitely will be talking about it in the future. Maybe even try to get, the attorney to check in with us and see how we can discern what those audits are going to look like. And yeah, we gotta be informed voters, y'all. We gotta be woke. So I want to just, when we talked about mental health, I've been asked this more than one time, and I keep getting asked more and more in the last year or two. I would say probably since COVID. and that is, how do I maintain my sanity and health? Now, it's not a secret or a mystery or a magic trick, you know, because I've been doing this work for a long time. And one of the things an elder told me when I was starting as a young organizer is, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. And so you have to live your life accordingly. If you're going to be effective, you got to live your life according, like you want to be here for the long haul. So that means, you know, staying out of debt, you know, living simply. That means, eating healthy, you know, not smoking. I never smoked. I do, you know, have occasional wine or beer. But I think the sanity part is what people really zero in on. And I tell you, that's really hard. It's really hard to do this work and not, you know, soak in some of the toxins. But you have to all, you know, almost every day re-inoculate yourself to go back out there and fight, because it's all these things that you know are going to be thrown at you that can really be demoralizing. I would say that. So what I try to do with the sanity part is, you know, I do meditations, you know, clear your head where there's nothing going through it, because I have lots of that brain activity. I can tell you that. I have lots of ideas. I read a lot, so I'm thinking about what I just read. I'm talking to a lot of people, so I'm thinking about what I talk to them about. So it's lots of racing things going through my head. So sometimes I just got to quiet it down, so that there's nothing going through there. And then when I find myself quiet for like a few seconds and then start thinking about something, I don't give up. I come back to the quiet place, because you just need to have some free space to reflect and think about what's going on. The other thing I do with sanity, you know how some people you'll see on social media, they're going on trips, and, you know, even in the commercials, they, you know, they're on a cruise, they're on the beach. Most of us are not going to be able to do that, y'all. It's just too expensive. So we're going to have to create those little getaways in our head. You got to be imaginative to do that. So sometimes I'm on that beach with my Mai Tai, and I'm looking at my toes in the white sands, and I just think for like about 5 minutes, I'm just on that beach listening to the waves, and nothing else is in my way. That's all that's going on. And so, yeah, nowadays they got all kind of apps to help you do that, but I don't really use those apps like Calm and all of that. I just go inside and do my own thing. But you know, I know I'm not going to go on a cruise. I wish I could be in the Bahamas or Jamaica, but I can have my own little creative getaway right here in my head. So we're going to have to do that, y'all. You can't always get away physically. You can't. It costs money to do that. Plus, sometimes people don't even want to travel because it's getting kind of dangerous to even travel from one place to the other. But, you know, let's try to find ways to keep positive people around you, keep people around you that have your best interest at heart and will tell you when you're going astray. That's the other thing. In 2023, I had a resolution where I was not going to chase people. If you owe me money, I wasn't going to chase you. If I had given you advice personally or about a movement issue, and I'm waiting to hear back from you on how it went, I'm not going to chase you, you know, because that's energy and time that most times will lead to frustration. So 2023, cut all that out. I had some real moments of pure, like, joy of not doing that. So I said, okay, what I'm going to do for 2024? Here's what I did for 2024, you all. I go a lot of places, a lot of programs, a lot of meetings. So I'm in my car. I decided in 2024 that's going to be my party bus. So I cannot play news during the times that I'm in the car. I can only play music. And so I'm tuned in to Smokey Robinson's, you know, channel on Sirius FM. And I just party, you know, with my oldies but goodies and my other music. And so when people are acting a fool out there, you know, doing the road rage, you know, cutting in front of you, not turning on their signal, you know, I just throw my hands in the air like I just don't care and keep on partying. And sometimes when I'm partying in my seat at the stop sign, somebody will see me partying, they'll start partying. They can't even hear my music, but they know I'm enjoying it. So, hey, I'm not going to let these people get me all out of sorts with their stupidity, because road rage is up, y'all. People are going into people's cars, taking animals out and throwing them across the highway. I mean, it's insane. This only happens in America, y'all. We are out of control. So we need to find ways that we can control our own emotions, our own responses to that stuff around me. So I'm in my car minding my own business and I'm partying. So I'm not going to let you get into my zone. So whatever you want to do, cutting in front of me, I'll just let you have it, because I'm not going to be going out over some stupid stuff like a turn signal not being on. So I'm just saying, y'all, we have to control the things in our environment that we can. There's some things that we can influence, but when it comes to yourself and your emotions, at least try to exert some control over them, or rechanneling or whatever, because it's crazy out here. It really is. So in the next few months, we're going to be doing some experimenting with the show. I have a wonderful webmaster. He's on it. But one thing he can't figure out, y'all, is how you can download these shows. You can go to the website and listen to it, but you can't download it. So he's trying to figure that out. So if anybody has some ideas about that, they're called plugins. You have to have a certain plugin on the website. And so he hasn't figured out which one works for us. But, you know, you can, all the shows that are here on Black Radio Hall of Fame for me are on my website at JamalaRogers.com. And you can also see some other interesting things there, like what I've written about, and some of the other podcasts. But, right now, until further notice, you can't download the program, but we're still going to be looking at other things. We're going to be looking at live streaming, and you know what that is. That is like, while we're actually going on, you can hear us through either YouTube or Facebook. So we're going to be playing around with that and doing that up to our second anniversary of the show, which unbelievably is in August. I can't believe it's been 2 years. But we're having fun and we're learning, and I'm learning, as I am interviewing folks. I'm learning a lot, not just about the information, but just about people. And I think that's important for us to always know. So live streaming, is coming up, because I do want to hear from you all. I miss that, in terms of questions or feedback or even, you know, disagreements. Cause I know I do these disclaimers, but one of the things I know for a fact is that if you really want to have public discourse, you have to create the environment that is okay for people to disagree. You know, Black Radio Hall of Fame and Harris State University are not going to agree with everything I say. My mama doesn't even agree with everything I say, but she still loves me and I love her. So we have to have a discussion about what's going on in our world and our lives, and we have to be civil about it. So I know that we're going to have disagreements, but we need to figure out how can we have real communication, real listening, real, you know, discourse around these things that are so serious in our lives and in our communities. We have to figure out a way to do that. And so I'm going to be working on that. So I'm looking forward to, like, how to expand the program, how to get more people involved, more people listening. So we are got some good stuff coming up. Next week we're going to be talking to Jackson Windham around the anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. And if that name Windham sounds familiar, that's Alice Windham's brother. And that whole family was involved in education. So he's a good person to have on that. Plus we've done some projects and white papers together. And so I know he has a deep and profound interest in our young people in learning and education. So he'll be joining us next week. And following that, we got a program on Africa, because African Liberation Day is May 25th. And so that program had to be pre-recorded, you all. So it's going to be up on my YouTube channel, because I had to get those two people together, and it was kind of difficult to get them together on Wednesdays at 1 o'clock. But man, did I learn so much. I'm gonna have to listen to that show a couple more times. So that's coming up, African Liberation Day. And let me just say this while I'm talking about African Liberation Day. Progressive Books, Progressive Emporium, is having a African Liberation Day sale for the whole month of May, y'all. So May 1st to May 31st, you're going to get 15% off your entire purchase. But guess what you got to do? You got to give them the name of an African country. Now, you know, that's simple, y'all. All you got to do is Google that, and you're going to get some good stuff over there, too. So they do this sometimes with different black holidays, like during February. If you give them a Black History fact, you get so much off of your purchase. And so, you know, when I go over there, I get a lot of stuff during Black History Month, because I'm going to know some stuff before I go over there. So it's fun, and they know it's fun, but it's all about education and also supporting the black business, Ujamaa. So, yeah, so that's coming up. Also coming up, we're going to have Ben Phillips, who's going to be talking about Pruitt-Igoe. He grew up there. He's got lots to say about that. He was a part of the film that was made about the chemical warfare on Pruitt-Igoe folks by the U.S. government. He's going to talk about that. So that's going to be real interesting as well. I can't wait for that one. I did see the film, and I'm telling you, y'all, I was, okay, I'm not going to talk about that now. I'm going to wait for Ben to calm me down around that. But, yeah, so those are the rest of the month for May that's coming up on this show. But I do want to say there are some events that are coming up that I know you should be involved in. And that one of them tomorrow, the Coalition Against Police Crimes and Repression continues their political education on abolition. And so that's going to be at 6 o'clock at the Deaconess Center, 1000 North Vandevender. We are using Derrica Purnell's book on becoming abolitionists. And so, we got study questions and that kind of thing, but that's going to be every other month starting this month. And so if you really don't understand abolition, it's not required that you read the materials before you come. Just come and sit and listen and see what questions you might have, because we're now in the midst of the budget, city budget. And so that's really what it's all about. You don't get to abolition like overnight. You have to begin to look at the systems and the budgets from where the money is going, so that you can make some strategic moves about how you want to begin, pulling that money back from budgets that really are just meant to occupy our communities and not really be responsive. And so that's tomorrow, Thursday. That's going to be 6 o'clock again at the Deaconess Center. I think that is all of the announcements that's coming up. I'm going to try to keep you informed about the events going up. My webmaster is also putting those up on my website. If you missed anything and, you know, didn't have time to copy it down, he's trying to get that up there fairly quickly, and he's been doing a good job about that. So I think, we want to continue to be woke, to be informed, to love on one another, because it's some storms are brewing, y'all. It's some storms are brewing. And, we got to get to the November election, and it's not looking good about the climate that's being created in this country around that election. And I know people are angry with Biden, particularly around the Palestinian question. you know, they're angry with the Democrats because they seem to always buckle under to the most extreme wing of the Republican Party. And so it's, this is the world we're living in now, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't have a vision about what it could be. I do believe another world is possible, but it's going to require us engaging, talking to one another, strategizing, and really just have the focus on transformative change wherever we are. Like, how can we be a change agent in our churches? How can we be a change agent in our schools, the universities, at the workplace? All of these things have been infected by racial capitalism and the need for people to be exploited. And so when I think about, you know, white supremacy, and I also have to think about internalized oppression of black people, because we then have internalized that we aren't worthy, we aren't important, and that's absolutely not the case. And so, you know, we're going to have to work hard just to make sure that we stay sane and sober and able to go come back for the next fight and the next victory. This is Jamala Rogers, and I am your host at, I'm pausing like this, y'all, because this happens every time when I can't get my music going. And that's because I'm pushing the wrong button. See, Bob's in here. He knows the system. He goes, I ought to let him be my mechanic. I mean, my engineer. But yeah, y'all, it's been fun. And this is Jamala, your host. Thank you for listening, and I will see you on the battlefield. Liberation.